Well, wouldn't you know it? A double over West Ham up at that stadium that, yeah, we'll pay for it. It still looks rubbish. But there we go. 3 points. And we head into a game on Sunday against Liverpool, who, let's face it, it's been a bit of an up and down season against them. So we're going to be delving into the good, the bad, and the probably indifferent of the West Ham game. Looking forward to Liverpool, and I have a stellar cast. Producer Don and Wigo join me. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for taking the time to spend on your Fulham Focus podcast.
Fulham.
Gentlemen, welcome. It's good fun to sit down. This is Monday evening. We've had a win on a Sunday. Wigo was at the game, so he's happy. So, yeah, let's start with him. What was it like up there? Because it's a stadium I have no desire whatsoever to ever visit. But what was it like? You actually weren't too far away from things happening.
It was a bloody shambles to start with because the turnstiles were all broken. So everyone was waiting ages to get in. You got security checked twice, three times. Someone still got in with a pyro, so God knows what the security were doing. But it was a great day. It's always good to get an away win, and you know they're few and far between these days. So yeah, they're a rarity. So it's always nice to pick a win up, and especially when you don't really win there that often. Last time we won there was 2001. So yeah, really, really good. Two good goals from Pereira as well. And yeah, 3 points, and it kind of gets us over that 40-point mark, and now we are mathematically safe as well, which, you know, we're all but there anyway, but it's nice to have it confirmed with 5 games to go. But yeah, good day out all in all in a pretty crap stadium, really.
Just on the pyro, because that went off after the second goal. Was that one of our lot, or was it one of theirs?
Oh, no, it was ours. I don't know where, though. I think it's bottom tier. It was bottom tier. I saw it. It was right in front of me.
All right, that I was like, oh, that's a bit strange. Anyways, Don, what did you think of it? What's your 2-minute take before we delve into it a little bit more?
Good game, fun to watch on TV. Everybody looked really nice, you know, the way they played in the game. Everything was going great up until like that hour and 49th minute when, you know, they happened to do a crowd shot, and you can see these hooligans sitting up there in the stadium, definitely the Fulham, you know, ultras and firm that you're just like disgusted, you know, people like Wigo and, you know, Dylan and Frenchie and all those guys, just ruins the whole thing, you know,
that Kish bloke, everyone thinks is lovely and does all the nice tactics things. He's a hooligan. He's an absolute monster, that boy.
So, it's always nice, you know, when they do a shot of the crowd and you recognize people, you're like, oh yeah, I know that. Politely say idiot and stuff like that. And it was a great crowd shot, I will say, because it had all of you guys, you know, cheering, arms in the air. You know, you could just tell you guys were thoroughly enjoying the day, enjoying the match and having a great time, even if you were in a shit stadium that had no pubs for you to go to afterwards around it.
It's not my first rodeo, Don. I've been caught on the TV a few times, unfortunately. Some good, some bad. So,
yeah, but we're not talking CCTV here, okay? Yeah. We're talking national.
Football games. Yeah. We're not talking Crime Watch. No, it's fine.
It doesn't. Yeah, it having only been up that way for the Olympics, you know, it's weird. Upton Park had loads of decent boozers around it, so you can always find a pint somewhere quite quickly. But anyways, that's. By the by, we won away. So happy days, boys. Let's delve into it, because going into it, it was one of those tricky ones. I thought they got turned over by Leverkusen, which, to be fair, not overly surprising. They're flying. They've just won. They've now just gone and won the league. Yeah, fair play to them, which means they're going to get battered on that Thursday. I thought this could be a bit tricky, but then dear old David Moyes decides to put on all his strikers, which, okay, great. And as Marco said after the game, that meant we made one interesting move, which was to drop dear old Andreas Pereira a little bit deeper. And I'm going to come out and say it. I've been hard on him this year. He looked fantastic from the off yesterday. His head was up. He was playing, as we said, more deep than normal. And it clicked, grabbed himself a couple goals, even though that first one, he did try really, really hard to kick it over. If it hadn't hit the back of the net, it would have gone out of the stadium. But honestly, I'm holding my hands up. He was superb. And yes, he did shoot a few times straight at the keeper like he normally does. But everything else, all the off-the-ball stuff, dropping deep, I thought he was superb. What did he look like in the flesh, Wigger?
Yeah, he looked good. And I think, you know, people have been annoyed at him this year. He has been fairly inconsistent, actually. And I think it's quite disappointing when you realise what a good season he had last year and he linked up really well with Mitrovic. That, you know, it would really sort of bring out how good he is when, you know, you're trying to adapt to playing with a new striker. But yeah, he was brilliant yesterday and a couple of very good goals, especially the second one I thought was very instinctive. And the first as well, to be fair. I did think it had hit the bar though as well, or it had gone over from where I was, because it is still miles away because that pitch is massive. But he took it really well. And it was a great start because we were under the cosh a little bit to start with as well. Antonio missed that sitter. But obviously, Wandsworth-born Antonio, you know, doing his bit for Fulham by skying it in the first couple of minutes. So, that was obviously really good for us. And then Mavropanos with a great assist to Pereira as well. So, perfect. We'll take it. Even if we didn't really deserve to be 1-0 up, it sort of opened the floodgates for us in a way, because we had quite a few chances in the first half. I know Willian had a really good chance and Polina had a decent shot as well. But yeah, look, I've kind of really gone off point there. But Pereira was really good yesterday and deserved his goals.
Yeah, Don, that opening chunk, it's sort of, I've become a bit enamoured with these momentum charts where you can see the things going. We've got nothing until after that first goal. And it was even then, they came out of their traps going for, as you would expect for a team that are looking up. They're seventh at the time, I think, when the game started. Not looking at my notes. They looked dangerous.
I would agree. You know, they were playing for positioning, you know, trying to make sure that they're back in Europe and all that stuff. So it was a very important game for them. Whereas for us, you know, it doesn't really matter. I mean, we're not going to get relegated, especially now, you know, so it's just playing for points, playing for pride kind of stuff, trying to get as high up the table as we can. Those first 5 minutes, I agree. You know, it seemed like Fulham was coming out real slow, like they notoriously can be. And this is going to be an ugly game because they were West Ham was just hammering us, I thought, really coming at us hard. I will say, they lost some of the momentum. They still played pretty hard after we scored, but they lost a lot of momentum when we took the ball away and that nice little chip over the top. And then Pereira does a beautiful job. You guys aren't giving him enough credit. I mean, he had to go around the goalie who came sliding out and everything. So he was calm, cool, collective, and then put it in the back of the net. So, you know, give him his due credit. It was a fantastic goal from him, especially since, you know, we all think he's the king of hit the woodworks, but apparently he's not. Muniz is. But at any rate, great goal, great start to the game. Well, not the greatest start to the game, but a great change in the game that allowed us to get the momentum going and control the game pretty much the rest of the time.
Yeah, it sort of was one of those games that we've come to get to see a lot of, with reasonably low possession, but just really, really solid. And then rapid counterattack. Again, I thought Muniz was superb holding the ball up. You know, if he's not in a position to score, he's doing excellent work making sure he's bringing other players in. And I think that little bit deeper with the both of them as well really opened it up. Willian, again, I thought was really, really good probing around on the whole thing. I'm surprised he lasted the whole game because he was running around like a loony for most of it.
I was scared he really hurt himself when he went down. You know, he hit his like shoulder on the carpet there off the side of the pitch and stuff. Because, you know, when he's not in the lineup, we just don't do the same.
For those of us that play on that 4G stuff all the time, you just bounce. some of us are even old. Some of us are even older than poor old Willian.
Okay.
Let's drop back a little bit, because there's been a lot of debate about Saša Lukić recently. And I was doing a little bit of research before this. Ladies and gentlemen, I do try to do a bit of prep. And again, still, I've thought he's had a superb season. And thanks to our resident Serbian, we have some statistics. So Tristan sent over, and then that was backed up by Sam as well. with Saša Lukić in the team, we've played 8 times with him. We've won 3 of those, drawn 2 and lost 3. But without him, we've not won any. We've drawn 3 and lost 6. With him, we've scored 4. Without him, we've scored 8. And the win percentage is 37.5 with him. So he's doing a job. He's, you know, I've always said he looked a bit of a square peg in a round hole last year, but he seems to have found, or Marco seems to have found, how to get the best out of him. What do you think, Wigo? Because I'm enjoying what I'm seeing from it.
Yeah, I quite like him. And I think, you know, we were talking before we started recording that actually it took a while for him to find his feet. And do you know what? That's natural with a lot of players that come from abroad. It's a new league to adapt to, right? And I think he's been brilliant, especially that Man United away performance the other week. That was exceptional from him. And he was great against Spurs as well and got his goal. So, yeah, and again, yesterday I thought he was really good. And he's starting to find his feet. And Silva's got a real dilemma on his hands in that midfield because we've got, you know, Polina, Kearney, Reed and Lukic, and all are very, very good players. You know, when Kearney was starting a run of games, he was excellent as well. So it's a real selection headache. And Lukic is currently, you know, especially away from home, proving why he should keep his spot because we seem to be picking up some results with him. So, yeah, really, really good to see for him as well, because I know he had doubters, but I really like the guy and I'm really glad he's finding his feet as well because he nearly left in January, which would have been a real shame. And he didn't really have it. He hadn't really got a chance by that point. So I'm glad he's getting his chance. I'm glad he's taking it. And, you know, we got him on a steal. It was about £8 million. Seems like a bargain, really, especially in today's market for anyone. And look, Silva's got a real track record of getting the best out of players. You could name a long list of players over the last 3 seasons that Marco Silva has made a remarkable improvement to. Obviously, most notably, recently, Rodrigo Muniz, right? You know, this is an excellent manager that we have who's got a real knack for getting the best out of players. And long may it continue. And it gives you great confidence going into the summer window that when we do get players in, that we are going to make the right signings. Because I feel like over the last few windows, we've got it pretty much bang on. And Lukic is actually proving to be a very good piece of business at a very good price.
It's interesting. I remember at the beginning of the year, we were talking about bemoaning our summer. And to be fair, we look at the signings that we've brought in that were in the lineup with Iwobi, Bassi and Castagna, especially. I think they are going from strength to strength. And I think that sort of pair of Tosin and Bassi is there's moments when you just sort of close your eyes and hope for the best. But there's an understanding among this team at the moment, which I think is really exciting to watch. And Wigo is going to pull me up on that and say, we're not as exciting to watch.
No, we are. Anyway. I think Castagna really has been brilliant as well. Like for 12 or 13 million, you know, when Tete got injured and he, you know, was sort of pushed into the team, he's been excellent all season, in my opinion. He rarely puts a foot wrong and he's just solid every week, sort of 7 out of 10 every week. And that, I've said it before about him. I think bloody brilliant player. And had a really solid game yesterday as well. So that's another really good signing at, you know, not a bad price, 12, 13 million. And he's been consistent and that's what you needed, right?
Premier League winner as well.
I don't think he is. He wasn't there.
Wasn't he there? I thought he was.
No, he wasn't.
This is why I didn't do enough.
It was Danny Simpson was Leicester's right back at that point, and it was someone else. Was. But yeah, no, he's been brilliant since he's come in, and a really good piece of business again. So yeah, but obviously he said Bassi is just exceptional, isn't he? He's on another level. But yeah, no, really, we've made some really good signings, and it gives you confidence, doesn't it, going into the summer when we need to improve on the squad, that actually we will hopefully get the right players. And, you know, a lot of them have been for pretty decent prices as well. So, see what happens there.
Hey, back to Lukic. Because I was looking at who actually started the games. I didn't get to go as far back as the beginning of the year, but I got back as to like mid-December. And I was surprised how many games Tom actually started. You know, because I do recall Lukic was out on the wings. You know, he was hardly ever noticed, hardly ever you know, chosen for anything. It seemed like he was, you know, the forgotten stepchild for some reason. But now that he's in, I'd be curious, because you guys have been at the games. I can tell you what I see on TV. What's the real difference between Lukic and Tom? You know, for me, it's the defending side is more of it. You know, they both like to get forward. Tom is more creative in my mind, but he also slows the game down more. So what is the big difference between the two in your guys' eyes?
For me, I think Lukic does more of the simple stuff well. I think Tom tends to be looking for some million-dollar passes sometimes, which don't always look great. But I think for me, Lukic is bringing other people in a little bit better at the moment. TC used to do that great. And I think that probably comes from match fitness when you're able to see these things a little bit better. But I've been really liking how, especially with him sitting on that sort of right side of him and Paulinho, how that sort of has been allowing us to shift those attacks from just being down the left. Because especially over Christmas and early in the year, it was just all down the left. We didn't really have anything else. But I think with Lukic there, there's and Iwobi and Castagne starting to get a bit more of a understanding, he brings them into it quite nicely. And that allows Pereira to find those little bits of spaces like he was doing on Sunday. That's my feeling. Wigo, what do you reckon?
Yeah, the same, really. I think Kenny's really good if you want to get control of a game, right? Especially bringing him on as a sub. If you're, you know, on the back foot, really, to really grab control of a game, Kenny's that perfect player because he's so good on the ball and he can beat a player really easily. Still at, like, what is he, 31, 32, Tom Kenny? So, but, you know, the ability is still unmatched. But, yeah, he is a bit slower, I think. But it's not necessarily a bad thing. They're just different types of player, which is absolutely fine. And actually, that's probably a good thing because you don't want too many of the same sort of mould of player. Otherwise, you're going to be very one-dimensional. So actually, to be able to have, you know, and I'd say across Reed, Kearney and Lukic, we've got three different types of player. That actually, it gives us a very versatile outlook in that centre of midfield to support Polina going forwards and actually going back as well. So, so yeah, no, it's a good thing. They are slightly different, but yeah, that's not a bad thing at all.
See, I said in the last pod, Fulham play two different ways. If we are looking to, especially for one up, two up, are winning the game, trying to control the game, we bring on Tom and we slow it down and we just kind of control the possession a little better, maintain everything. When Tom's off the field and Lukic gets in more so than Reed, it's okay, we're looking to do the break. We're looking to, we don't need as much possession, but when we do have it, we're going to make it count and make it really mean something. And so for me, Lukic is kind of the best of both worlds from a Harrison Reed and a Tom kind of perspective. So you've got the guy who's still trying to be creative, still going forward, burst of speeds, making things happen, but at the same time, tracking back like a pit bull, you know, in a china shop, just ready to wreck everything if he has to make sure that the back four aren't getting tackled and hit hard with everything. So to me, he's kind of the combination of both worlds. So
looking at what Kish had to say on his Cottage Tactical roundup was West Ham were looking down at our right side. They were definitely looking at the Castagne channel as where to go. So they were packing Antonio Emerson's innings around Paquessa for it. But as he says, points out, and as his graph shows, having Lukic there nullified that, which enabled the transition to be as good as it was through that game. So as you were saying, as we're missing TC for that sort of passing option going forward, it nullified what is quite an impressive attacking threat down the right there, which is what you want to see from it. And let's just give him a shout out. João Paulinho, no yellow card, Don. How do you feel? He's not one more closer to your 15.
Let's not jinx it, okay? So everybody take a drink. I am going to say, God bless. Let's hope he doesn't get the 15 cards. But, I mean, he's still sitting on 12. That's really well, really good, especially since this game, again, because we had less possession, his importance of putting in the right foot at the right time is so much more important because we have to get back control of the ball and then make something happen. And this game, he really stepped up with some really important, really good tackles. So no cards, good game for him. That's the best thing that, you know, Fulham could do right now, especially trying to finish out these last remaining games, especially now that we're going into some of these big boys, Liverpool and stuff next. So he's going to be vital.
Oh, 100%. And I thought he looked back to his old
self. Oh, yeah.
Which was nice to see. Because I thought he's maybe been a little bit under the bar that he normally does. One thing that did happen, of course, Fulham scored two goals and West Ham can't really do much. They started throwing on their youngsters and George Earthy came on. And he's one of these players that you, even if you don't follow West Ham, there's been people talking about him coming up through the youth ranks. He didn't last long, did he, Wigo, before he went down. We're not going to dwell on this, but this crap about Fulham cheering it, that's not something I have ever seen a Fulham fan base do when a player is down injured. You were there, and I you said earlier you didn't hear anything untoward.
No one cheered him getting injured. Everyone clapped him off when he got taken off, saying that everyone clapped in the 38th minute for Dylan Tom Bides. It was a Dylan Tom Bides day yesterday at the game as well. But yeah, everyone clapped George Earthy. There was nothing, you know, I think they were just singing Fulham songs, really. So even seeing some West Ham fans saying that some of the stuff going around is ridiculous. But the important thing is that George Earthy is okay. And that is what everyone in the ground wanted. Look, no one would ever be that disrespectful. I mean, we all saw Chris Basham break his leg in October and it happened right in front of me and I heard it snap. And, you know, seeing those sorts of injuries are just not nice, whatever sort of injury it is. So, look, the most important thing is that he's okay and you hope that he's back soon because by the sounds of things, he's a great prospect for West Ham. And look, hopefully he'll get some more first-team action because by the sounds of things, he's pushing the ranks and he deserves it. So, speedy recovery to him and hopefully he'll be back on the pitch soon.
The other thing that people were talking about in my different chat groups and stuff, that stadium, because of the way it's designed and so big and everything, a lot of the Fulham fans that were up in the upper tiers, it took them a while to really figure out what was going on, you know, because it's not the best view, number one.
To be fair, it takes some of our fans a while.
Well, like the first goal, a lot of them around Sam, he said a lot of fans were thinking that it was William that had scored. They couldn't even tell which players were which. They were so far away. So, you know, I've never heard of a Fulham fan, at least none of the ones I know, being ugly like that. So,
absolute load of shit. It was a load of shit.
So I think we should move on to bigger and better topics.
Yeah, I think the thing that's interesting, I just wanted to wrap up, is our points without possession. So I think we do well when we're not bossing a game. And I think that's, you know, we look at a couple of recent defeats. We were sort of all over teams and walked away with nothing. We go into Liverpool on Sunday. It is Sunday, isn't it? Yes, it is Sunday. We go into Liverpool on Sunday, having already played them three times this year, and which is weird, frankly. But let's start breaking it down. The league game up at Anfield was one of those ones which I'm still a little bit annoyed about, even though it's been months with, you know, taking the lead with 10 minutes to go and then having two minutes and two moments of absolute stupidity to throw that game away to leave there 4-3. It's the cup games again at Anfield, really good counterpunching. I thought we came away thinking it was great, had tickets. I got COVID, couldn't get into the ground, as in the home leg at the cottage we were in, the Riverside, took us 40 minutes to get into the ground. And then the next day I was ill. So, you know, screw the Riverside. I'm not sitting in there anymore. But other than the 20 minutes in that second leg towards the end after we scored, we're a bit lethargic. Now, we're coming into this game off the back of a good performance. Liverpool are not. And as my family at Crystal Palace, they suddenly all think they're the greatest team on the planet again for holding out. And to be fair, Anderson had a fantastic game and they can thank Fulham for finding him. But what are we thinking going into this? I don't know. I'm a little bit confident. But do you think they're going to want to snap back at somebody? Because, you know, they were thrown everything but the kitchen sink against Palace and couldn't get through on Sassett's Sunday. So what are we thinking? How do we feel?
They're gonna be bang up for it, aren't they? Like this, you know, this is a massive, massive game. If we beat them, they can, and especially if Arsenal and City win this weekend, and you know, if Liverpool lose, it is going to be really, really tough for them. And you know, I would love nothing more than to see Jurgen Klopp walk away with nothing. but you know, we've run them close every game since we've been back in the Premier League. We drew 2-2, lost 1-0, lost 4-3. You know, lost in the Cup 2-1 and drew 1-1. Years ago, it would never have happened like that. I know we beat them in the COVID season, but you know, we never really gave teams that close a run. And you know, we can give them a game, and I just really hope that we turn up like we did against Spurs, like we did against United, Man United, that is, not Sheffield United. I really hope we turn up like we did at Old Trafford and just really go for it, because we can have a say in this. And also, it'd be good to get as many points on the board as we can, try and push for top half finish if we can. You know, let's not sit on the beach here, because the difference in places can be worth quite a bit of money to the club. So, you know, let's hope that actually we do try and push on a little bit and see if we can break that 50-point mark. Wouldn't that be bloody good? And yeah, let's ruin some seasons in the process for everyone else, especially Liverpool. That would just be exceptional, I think, if we beat them. They're the ones I really want to beat. Will it happen? I don't know. They're going to be bang up for it. It's, you know, they've got to bounce back. They have to bounce back here. So we'll see. But, you know, you never know what could happen.
They're not on a great run of form, Don. They got beat by Palace, got turned over by Atalanta, which was quite something to see. I'm in the Wigan camp. I do not like Liverpool. So if, yeah. There's a bit of Schrapfen food, or however you say it. But they haven't won since beating Sheffield United back on the beginning of the month. So I don't know. What do you feel? They're too good to discount. But
so this is one of those teams, you know, that I don't know. I wish I could say I feel super strong that we're just going to go in and this is going to be one of those nice games that we just overturn them, you know. But I don't know. I have a weird feeling just, and it has to do with, again, how consistently inconsistent Fulham are. You know, you just never seem to know who's going to show up on the day. You know, with that said, I've got a mate here, lives around the corner. He's a big Liverpool fan. He's livid right now with them. He thinks they've blown it. Losing to Palace, he thinks they've blown it now. If he said, if they lose to us, it's over. You know, that they're not going to have any chance at getting number one. But if we play our game like we've been playing and we go with the lineup that we've been going with here, with, you know, William out on the left, I will be out on the right, Luke sitting back there with Polina, I think we've got a chance, you know, and we play the low percentage possession. You know, look for the break, make what percent of the ball we have count. Muniz is staying strong like he's been. You know, we might get something out of this. We might surprise them and really piss them off. And, you know, then that would make Wiggo's year and he'll have to celebrate for the next week. And you know.
Well, I'd be celebrating as well.
I might be awake by Sunday as well, because I was extremely jet lagged yesterday, but still managed to make the most of it. But I might be awake by this Sunday.
See, he's a hardcore fan. He goes straight from New Zealand off the jet to the stadium.
Oh no, I had Saturday.
Okay, to relax. One day.
Yes, dear listener. It looks like he's just come back from New Zealand. There's poor lad.
I feel like I have.
Well, you know, delving into this a little bit. I think the interesting conversation that's going on is Klopp announces he's leaving at the end of the season. There's a huge amount of hype about, you know, the quadruple potential. Has that burdened the team with a lot of expectation that they need to win something for him before he goes this year? Yes, they've already won lots of things. That's by the by, that stands on its own. Have they maybe put too much pressure on themselves leading into this? Because this is a sort of title run-in where whoever blinks isn't going to do it. And at the moment, with Man City doing what they normally do at this point of the season, just going through the gears, it's going to take something special to turn that around. Granted, Arsenal aren't helping things either.
You know, talking to my mate, who is the Liverpool fan, he says they're trying all kinds of things to turn things around. Klopp is giving more inspirational speeches right before the game, and Van Dijk is pulling everybody together into a circle, you know, to give the prep talk and make sure that they're all ready to go on the front foot and, you know, be playing as hard as they can right away. But it's not happening, at least not right now for them. So hopefully that continues.
I think there's probably something to it. Getting to this point of the season and things wobbling, does that pressure start to tell? And do you think we can capitalize on it, Wigger?
Yeah, I think the thing is, actually, you can look across a lot of the leagues and momentum's a massive thing. Look at the championship promotion race. No one wants to get promoted. They're all crumbling. It is a momentum thing towards the end of the season. The teams down the bottom really start to pick up points because they're scrapping for their lives, especially in the championship. And the teams up the top end up struggling a little bit. Arsenal bottled it last year. And there's no shame in losing to Villa because they are a fantastic side as well. So, you just can't call it at the moment. Anything can happen. Any Fulham can turn up on Sunday. It's a bit like Palace when they ruined their... Well, a bit like this season, but a bit like 10 years ago or whatever when Palace drew 3-0. They ruined Liverpool's title chances. And you just can't call it at this stage of the season. It could go either way any week in any game. But as you said, City are going through the gears and they are going to be the ones to beat. I feel, if you were to ask me about us, I would say I'd feel... Obviously, it's completely hypothetical, but I would say I'd feel more confident about beating Liverpool than beating City if we were to play them both right now. But who knows? Who knows what will happen? That is the beauty of football, isn't it?
You know, the other thing is, you know,
that's how to make a statement on a podcast when you've run out of steam.
There you go. That's football. No one fucking knows what will happen. Lovely. Thank you very much. Cheers for listening.
Thanks for listening, ladies and gentlemen. We'll see you next week when we find out how tested that theory is. Sorry, Dom. Well, off you go.
Hopefully, you know, the other thing that'll be to our advantage is they've never liked coming to the Cottage. The pitch is just too small for them. They love. You know, City's the same way, but City's a much faster on the break and things like that. But they do not like being compact like that. They want as much field, as much pitch as they can to spread out and be creative and do their thing. So hopefully that'll be one more thing that just puts a burr in their saddle and allows us to have an edge.
I don't know. I remember them having some pretty good days at the Cottage going back a while, Don. It's a small pitch, but yeah. It's still bloody Liverpool. It's going to be fun to watch, I think. Looking at the stats, there's always goals in it, which is going to be good for those of you who like to have a little flutter on things. And there's lots of numbers here on this side I'm looking at for overs and unders. But with where things are at the moment, I've got the table open here. We are currently 42 points, mathematically safe. All is good. Bring it on. Well done, the lads. Now, for us, there's this incredibly tight little bit from ninth down to Bournemouth just behind us. So them lot up the road are on in ninth and 44 points. They have three games in hand on us. Bournemouth have got one game in hand on us in 13th. But there's 2 points in those five places. With the amount of money that's on offer for each of those points, this really, hopefully, should see us kicking on, because there's quite a lot there. We finished 10th last year. The West London Mini League we're currently second in, and to be fair, that's about as low as we can finish, because Brentford aren't going to do any better than they're doing at the moment. So, who feels that maybe there's a couple of places we can grab here if we start snatching some of these wins, because we've still got to play City in May, so that's not going to be good. But there's some winnable games coming up, and you know, should we be looking up as opposed to, as we were worried about the other week, being a little bit on the beach?
Ultimately, this season was about consolidation, wasn't it? There's always this second season syndrome, and can you fight it? And we fought it very well. Obviously, we've picked a good year for it with point deductions and actually the promoted teams not being as strong. But we still had to do our job and we still had to get over the line. It would be good to finish as high as we can, but ultimately it is job done, I guess, right? But you always want to do better. You always want to improve. 10th place last year was excellent. And actually, for a while, we looked like finishing in the top seven last season. So, you know, you always want to be getting as close to that as you can. The games that Liverpool and City are always going to be hard. Everyone wants to beat Brentford away. I certainly do. That is the big one for me that I really, really, really want to win.
Did you get a ticket for it?
I did, yeah. I'm in the 1,000-point club, mate. That's why. That's the one. And then obviously Luton, last game of the season, isn't it? I mean, they might end up, if they stayed up at Brentford's expense, oh, what a day that would be. I think everyone would be celebrating with the Luton fans. But look, there's fixtures to be had, right? It's a 38-game season. You want to try and win as many of those 38 games as possible. And we want to get points on the board. You want to have a bit of confidence going into the end of the season, feel a good summer and get ready for next season. And players have Euros places to play for as well, by the way. You know, especially the European players, they have places to play for. So they're going to want to be consistent. They're going to want to put in performances to consolidate or, you know, give their international managers something to think about for them to be potentially be going to Germany this summer. So, look, there's lots on the line, personally, individually, as a team, as a club. So, you know, it's not over yet. But, look, job done in terms of staying up. But how far can we go now?
So the other week, Don, we talked about the run-in, which, as everyone will know, he says looking it up because he couldn't remember it, Liverpool, Palace, Brentford, City, and then Luton and Kenilworth Road on the final day of the season. So far, the predictions we made have been completely wrong for that. But like I said, the Palace is family grudge game. We got to beat that lot. And to be fair, they looked really quite good against Liverpool, which was really annoying. But coming into this, we've got this game on Sunday and then the two London derbies before we play City back at the Cottage in May. What are you thinking here? Would you, okay, let's play devil's advocate, take a loss on Sunday and take two wins?
This is where,
or do we just want to beat Liverpool?
No, this is where I am. I'm not ultra competitive if you were to meet me, but I want everything to win. I always want the team to win. So
that's ultra competitive.
I will never say, yeah, I want to lose to Liverpool and then win the next two. I will never say that. I want to win them all. Now, with that said, listening to you two, it sounds like you'd be happy to lose to Liverpool so long as we beat Palace and Brentford. Then you'd be happy as can be.
Night.
Okay.
No, you're misreading. Okay. I moved to England at the start of the 90s when Liverpool were the greatest team in the world, apparently. And at school, when you didn't really care about football and all you heard about was Liverpool, you learned to despise them to a high degree. So I want to beat them as badly as anyone.
And what we said at the start of this segment, we want to ruin Jurgen Klopp's last season because he is a moaning bastard. And I would love nothing more than to see him bow out with a Carabao Cup and nothing else when there was talk of a quadruple. Wouldn't that be fucking amazing, moaning old bastard? So, yeah, I'd love to beat Liverpool. I would love to beat Liverpool. And I really fucking hope we do.
You know, the thing right now that's going to... This is where what I kind of always find interesting when we're in a situation like this towards the end of the season, I'm always curious to see, are the players for the remainder of the games, no matter who the competition is, are they going to be professional and play all out to the best of their abilities at all times? You know, or are they just going to say, well, at this point, it really doesn't matter. So let's go out there. We'll run around, try not to get hurt. So we're still able to go and do whatever we want to do for the summer. But I'm hoping that, you know, We come out strong as professionals can be. With looking at the stats, you know, I'm hoping that, again, we kind of play more for the break. Don't worry about the possession. Let Liverpool have their darn possession. The only thing I don't want to see us do, because we're notorious for this, is sit back and try and absorb the pressure. And then when that happens, Liverpool ends up sneaking in a late minute winner again. That is the part that would send me through the roof. That just makes my head explode.
I think the thing that we've got going for us at the moment is everybody's fit.
Oh yeah.
And the bench is quite strong. So, you know, if this, with this sort of run in with some winnable games, I've said this before and it's going to come back to haunt me. With some winnable games, you don't want an off game because there is someone chomping on the bitch to come off, which is a fantastic place to be in. And, you know, just going back to, as I said before, when we were looking at this at the beginning of the season, bemoaning our summer, we're in a really, really nice position. And yeah, so we see the likes of Brojo and Harry Wilson, things coming on and seeing out the game as we have done for the last little while. But there are also players, especially in Brojo's position, who's desperate for minutes. So that is a position to be, other teams would be quite envious for having it in, because I think there's quite a few guys on that bench who actually see them as themselves as starters and they're probably a bit annoyed they're not, Wigger.
I'd like to see Brojo get some more minutes. However, I just can't because Muniz is so bloody brilliant and has just completely turned everyone's opinion has completely transformed on him, you know. Let's have it right. Everyone thought that he was rubbish a few months ago and he's just completely turned it around and looks like a fantastic player. And this isn't a purple patch either. But he's keeping Brojo out of the team. And if it takes £4 million to Chelsea for Muniz to start firing, then bloody hell, it could be some of the best. It'll be the best £4 million that we've spent for years. Because, like, he's just been exceptional. And what can you say? There is not a lot more you can say. Player of the month. I mean, player of the month in the Premier League. And bloody well deserved as well. And he just looks so happy as well. That's what's so humbling. He's so happy to be there and he's so happy to play and be performing well. And it's just such a lovely thing to see. He's not arrogant at all. Just seems like an all-round decent bloke. And I couldn't be happier for Muniz, to be fair. So if it means Brojo not getting any minutes, it means Jimenez not getting any minutes, then so be it. Because big up Muniz. He's a fucking brilliant guy.
I completely agree. One of the other Fulham group chaps I mean was bemoaning the fact that, you know, he's not getting the minutes, so therefore we're going to have to pay for him. And you're like, come on. If we get this Muniz on a continual improvement and seeing the different ways he's playing, especially the last couple of games where he hasn't scored, but he's been working his socks off and really, really done sort of Mitro-esque things that we'd come to expect over the last few years. Yeah, hell, I'll bicycle the check over to Chelsea myself if it means Muniz continues to improve.
That goal at Sheffield United is worth the money alone because that was just exceptional. I mean, I was sat in my hotel room at 6 o'clock in the morning in New Zealand, and I screamed when that goal went in. It was exceptional. It was so worth it. That was just amazing. And that is a player in confidence, isn't it? This isn't a purple patch, though. This is a guy finally realizing his potential.
The other thing, you know, we need to keep in mind that $4 million is a drop in the bucket compared to where we were at, you know, and how we were doing, and then Muniz all of a sudden starting to fire. The fact that the way he's fired and performed and got us the goals and helped us with our performance and got us at the place where we're at on the table is so important. And the reason being is it's not just, you know, the amount of money you get for positioning. It goes into next season. Where are you going to be on the TV, you know, schedule, and how many times are you going to be televised? You know, the higher up that you are, the better chances you're going to have of being televised, you know, and get more money. So,
Don't get me started.
I'm just telling you, it can't be stated how important, you know, that it is that Muniz started firing the way he did. Okay, because we were all shitting bricks. You know, like Juarez started doing well, then gets hurt. You know, blah blah blah. It's like, oh shit, what are we going to do? Where are the goals going to come from? And don't get me wrong, we're still struggling, you know, to get goals. You know, we're not like, oh my God, in the final third. But the fact that he is doing what he's doing, including off the ball, you know, showing up strength, holding up play, bringing other players in, that's key. That is so key that, you know, I hope he keeps that going. And next season is phenomenal for him, you know, from the get-go. He just hits the ground running.
So one thing that's popped up in our group chat while we've been chatting is our boy Jay Stansfield, who I think we all want to see more of and is having a reasonably lovely time in Brum. And what do you think? Because we've got a good crop of youngsters coming through. We've had our consolidation season. What do you think? Will we see Jay in the full 25 next year? Or do you think we're going to see him going out on loan again? Because there's quite a lot of, especially Birmingham City people and others, saying he's likely to go. What do you feel?
I think he'll stay. I think he will. He started in the Premier League last season before he went back to Exeter. And ultimately, these years of first-team football, successful loan spells as well. I know Birmingham aren't doing very well, which, you know, is more on the owners, but Stansfield's done pretty well. These are successful loan spells that ultimately will convince Fulham to keep him rather than get rid of him. If he went on two loan spells and he was shit for both of them, they might be having a different conversation, right? But I would be very, very, very surprised if they decided to sell him, because he's clearly got good potential. He's clearly got the ability, which we've all seen firsthand as well, that it would just completely ridiculous to even suggest that we'd sell him. And now I've said that, I bet we will. But from my perspective, it would just be ridiculous, because the bloke is a really, really good footballer. And I think Silva will want him involved next year. And ultimately, it doesn't hurt to have these young players involved. You know, we've got a slightly ageing squad, really, you know, in some parts. So to actually have these younger players in and around the team will be really good. And I do hope he gets some minutes next season. And there's no reason why he can't either. You know, you look at how Muniz has performed, who had a crap loan spell last season in the Championship, by the way. So there's no reason why Stansfield can't excel in our team next season. And the same with the likes of Luke Harris and Marshall Godot as well, out on loan at Wigan, who's doing very, very well. I like that these young players are out on loan getting first team football. And there's these players out on loan that can break through, get an opportunity, break through and perform really well, i.e. Connor Bradley at Liverpool, who was on loan at Bolton last season or earlier this season, and has been exceptional ever since he got into the Liverpool team. So there's stories there to be told from these young players. It would just be good to see him get the opportunity, you know?
I think that's a really positive place to start wrapping this one. Yeah. Dom, what did you have to
say? No. I agree. We have three or four players that are out there from the academy that are doing well. Isn't Ollie Sanderson, isn't he another one? I think Dave Wilson always talks about.
Yeah, Ollie's saying
at Sutton or whatever.
Yeah, he's at Sutton. He's actually sponsored by our friend Claire's charity.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, he's obviously on loan from Fulham and got a couple of goals the other week when they won. Can't remember where they won. Notts County.
You definitely want, or I would definitely like to see players like Jay, our favorite Canadian, also, you know, to be in that first team squad next year and be fighting for positions, you know, because we definitely need the fresh blood. We definitely need younger players coming in. My fear is that we're going to pull our old Fulham, come back 2011 and that kind of time frame, where we instead we would offload these players for as much money as we can, you know, and then bring in that middle-aged, I've lost my position in at my former club, I'm still a decent player, you know, and I still have some to offer, so we bring them in, you know. It's not necessarily a bad thing, but I don't want to be back on that old foot of bringing in these older players and Berbatovs, you know, and different ones, trying to just keep things kicking along.
Well, if Ricardson wants to reunite with Marco Silva, I won't complain too much, but there we go. Anyways, let's have a quick look around what else is going on. So Fulham women are up at Enfield Town on Sunday, and they've had a bit of a break, so they haven't gone out. But let's give big up our youth again, because the under-21s and under-18s both playing Chelsea this weekend. But let's just give a shout out to the under-21s, who, again, still on a bit of a roll, beat Newcastle away 3-1 last Saturday. But the under-18s result was the one that jumped out at me, he says, having just closed that window. 2-1 down at halftime away at Spurs, 4-3 victory. Well done, the lads there. So the under-18s play on Saturday at Motspur Park against Chelsea, and the under-21s, it's Friday night at King's Meadow away for that one. So keep an eye on that. So some West London derbies with the youth, the ladies up at Enfield Town, and the big one on Sunday as well. So lots of Fulham action. Keep an eye out on all the channels for how everybody gets on. Don, Wigo, thank you so much for joining me on this sunny Tuesday evening. Wigo, you can go to bed now.
Thanks. It's also Monday, so I don't know who's the one that's more tired, to be fair.
Is it not? We normally do this on Tuesday. Why am I thinking Tuesday? I have no idea. There we go. See, one day back in the office and my brain goes to mush. Don, thank you so much. And everybody, thank you for joining us here on Fulham Focus. Remember, check in on your mates. Make sure everybody's looking forward to the weekend. And may you have a wonderful day on whichever it is you listen to this, because clearly I have no idea what day of the week it is. I've been Boney, and this has been your Fulham Focus podcast. Thanks, everybody. Take care of yourselves.